you've got an athlete that you want to start exposing them to some weightlifting movements, but they can't get in a front squat position. It doesn't mean you can't teach them weightlifting. It means, okay, well, we'll just work around that. Alongside, we'll be working on the front squat and then we'll add it back in. So maybe they're working on some jump shrugs, for example, or some high pulls, and maybe even some first pulls in isolation. They're doing those movements to then add in anything with the catch to progress it on. So I think in weightlifting, it's really useful to use the derivatives. So we can break the movement down and teach it as part practice. But what we also want to make sure is that we're not breaking it down too much, because then we end up with all of these isolated movement skills that actually, when you put it together, they're not performing it anything like they would in the full movement. It's important to break it down, but use common derivatives rather than just saying to an athlete, okay, I want you to do a first pull, then pause, then do a transition, then pause, then do a second pull, then pause, because then we end up with something that looks nothing like the real movement.
All right, Steph, welcome to Evidence Strong. My pleasure to have you tonight. I contacted you because you authored a paper taking a long-term approach to the development of weightlifting ability in young athletes. So I'm super excited to talk to you about this paper. But before that, I would ask you to introduce yourself a little bit.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. And thanks for asking me to talk about the paper. It's always good to disseminate our research. And introduction to myself. So, my main role at the moment is lecturer in strength and conditioning at Cardiff Metropolitan University. So, I've been in that role kind of a couple of years now. And then, alongside that, I'm doing a PhD via publication and this review paper. So, taking a long-term approach to developing weightlifting was the first review paper, which will hopefully make up my PhD thesis.
Let's start from the beginning, maybe. So, at what age and what skills should be developed, and how it relates to weightlifting?
Kind of one thing I don't like to do too much is like give a specific age of like, okay, when they get to this age, cool, we're good to go. Because we all know that growth and maturation can affect how athletes respond to training and what training is most suitable to them. So I think I kind of mentioned in the paper, it was research by Greg and Avery, so Meyer and Fagenbaum, where they suggest that when an athlete's old enough to follow instructions, that's kind of a good time point to introduce them to strength and conditioning or physical development. So I quite like that, because it's then varied and we're not saying, yeah, that at this kind of time point. When they're old enough to kind of follow instructions, I think it's a good time frame to introduce them to fundamental movements or athletic motor skill competencies that underpin more sport-specific tasks. So it's not a case of saying, yeah, when they're at this point, like, yeah, great, get them in doing cleans and snatches. It's a case of, well, this is a good time to introduce them to these fundamental movements to then build a good foundation of movement competency and strength to then build on those to kind of participate in sport, but then also maybe go on to introduce them to more technical movements that might include weightlifting, whether it's they're using weightlifting as a training method later on in S&C, or whether they're actually participating in weightlifting kind of as a sport. So, yeah, I think that's one of the key things in terms of when are they old enough. And then I think another important thing to consider is having those key foundations. So, we're not just introducing athletes to weightlifting as their first movement that they do in the gym, but we're making sure that they've got a good solid foundation of strength and movement competency. So, it's making sure they can kind of squat, they can hinge, they can push and pull. They can core brace, they can kind of do those movements well. Then we can start to load them, and then we can start to do some of the like weightlifting derivatives. Or like, I always find it quite frustrating when coaches say it takes a long time to teach weightlifting, because I mean, you could get somebody in and say, jump with a bar in your hand, which isn't effectively a jump shrug and really doesn't take that long to coach. And yes, it's not like a clean or a snatch, but it's a weightlifting derivative which we can kind of then build upon if we do want to go into the full lifts or more complex derivatives from that. So yeah, I think that's the important thing, is having a good foundation to build your weightlifting skills upon, and then also making sure they're at the right age, or I guess kind of maturity to be able to follow instructions within a gym environment or a training environment.
Okay, so I will ask why young is better than waiting for them to get all the fundamental skills from other sports and go to weightlifting later.
So I guess I kind of always come back to like strength and conditioning and then onto weightlifting. But I think like any movements within a gym environment can teach them the fundamental movement skills. Like it always baffles me when parents are like, oh no, they can't do S&C until they're, I don't know, 14, or they can't lift weight until they're this age, but they're out playing rugby, football, whatnot, and being exposed to all of these high forces in being expected to tolerate all of this, which is sometimes a lot more than what we're expecting them in quite a controlled environment. So I think exposing young athletes to these movements at a really young age can actually improve their performance within those sports later on. But I'd say maybe more importantly is it can really help to reduce their injury risk as well. If we get them moving well, kind of develop good movement competency in a closed environment, like in a squat, for example, when they then have to develop that and get into a squat position in their sport, they're a lot like less likely to get injured, or when they're landing, for example. So I guess it's about reducing their injury risk when they're participating in sport. And also just daily life, getting good movement competency is really important. We know that athletes that do better enjoy sport more, so you enjoy what you're good at, obviously. So I think if you can get athletes moving well and enjoying being in the gym and doing any kind of form of strength and conditioning or physical activity from a young age, we're much more likely to get them kind of adhering to it when they get older. We know that then that has a positive effect on their kind of health and lifestyle. So I think that's really important to instill from a young age, is not using kind of strength and conditioning as like a bit of a punishment or anything. It's getting that enjoyment and getting that competency from a young age, to then it kind of does like a bit of a full cycle. If they enjoy it, they adhere to it, and we get this kind of like lifelong participation in sport off the back of that, ideally in weightlifting, if they do kind of get hopefully introduced to the weightlifting movements. I think like a lot of athletes have weightlifting in their programs as they maybe progress in a sport. So they might not be doing weightlifting when they start, but they get to kind of senior level or elite level, and maybe weightlifting is introduced at this point because they're kind of, I don't know, looking for new exercises, their training age has increased. And then it's like, okay, well, now you're introducing somebody who's a lot older, maybe not got this high neural plasticity that we think kind of might be there at a lower age. So you haven't taken advantage of that at a young age, and now you're expecting them to pick up a movement skill a lot later on. So if we can kind of expose athletes to weightlifting at a young age, around like prepubertal, it means that we can take advantage of this like heightened neural plasticity. They can pick up the movement skills quite easily. And then it means when they then get to learn it later on, or it's they're kind of continuing it later on, it's already there and they're already competent at the movements.
Can I stop for a minute and ask you what neuroplasticity is and how you would explain it?
So I guess it's this idea that we can pick up new movements or kind of learn how to perform new movements a lot more easily at this stage. So later on, if we're not taking advantage of this, it would be harder to perform the movements. It would take a longer time to do it. And once you've kind of got that, might call it like schema or like movement pathway, it's then retained within the system. So if we can learn it from a young age, it's then in your system, if you like, to then recall upon it later on when you're asked to do that movement.
We established that it's good to have the try weightlifting and then something about it. How will we go about it?
Most important thing, again, I'm already sounding like a broken record, is this idea of teaching athletic motor skill competencies first. So it's making sure that athletes can go on.
Could you give some examples what they are? So we are very specific.
Yeah.
What do we mean?
Yeah, so some of the work by Rodri Lloyd and John Oliver, so they're my supervisors as well, so kind of a lot of their stuff I rely on. So some of their work suggests that these athletic motor skill competencies, the movements that underpin kind of more sports specific skills, so squatting, hinging, core bracing and kind of anti-rotation, pushing and pulling, upper body, horizontal and vertical, jumping and landing, and I guess kind of less relevant to weightlifting, but still an underpinning, like kind of movement would be like sprinting, deceleration, acceleration. And then we've got kind of our fundamental movement skills that also come into that as well. So the idea of kind of like stabilization, throwing, catching, grasping as well. So it's making sure we've kind of built a good foundation of all of those before we're then narrowing into more like sport specific skills, which kind of weightlifting would fall under, or actually just more technical skills, which again, weightlifting would fall under. We kind of can't expect somebody to catch a clean in a front squat position if they can't do a prerequisite to that, which would be a front squat. And then likewise, we maybe wouldn't expect somebody to come in and do a front squat straight up. We're making sure they can do some of the prerequisites to that. So can they actually do a bodyweight squat? Can they do kind of a counterbalance squat, which might be a little bit easier to coach first? So it's looking at your end goal. If it is weightlifting, it's looking at, well, what are kind of the fundamental movements that they need to get in to do that first, and then working back from there. So definitely the ability to hip hinge is really important. We kind of get or perform that RDL movement when we go from that hang position, or as we kind of move through second pull in the weightlifting. Squatting is going to be really important for the catch position. So front squat for your clean, and then obviously your overhead squat for your snatch. So it's making sure that athletes have got those abilities. In terms of like teaching snatch or clean first, I'm probably not too set on which way. And I think it very much does depend on the athlete that you're working with. Some athletes find front squat really challenging, for example. Likewise, a lot of athletes might find overhead squat more challenging because of those overhead demands on mobility and stability. So I think ideally having a combination of a bit of both, making sure that you're kind of working on the limiting factor, if you like, and progressing through. So maybe if you've got an athlete that you want to start exposing them to some weightlifting movements, but they can't get in a front squat position, it doesn't mean you can't teach them weightlifting. It means, okay, well, we'll just work around that. Alongside, we'll be working on the front squat, and then we'll add it back in. So maybe they're working on like some jump shrugs, for example, or some high pulls, and maybe even some first pulls in isolation. They're doing those movements to then add in anything with the catch to progress it on. So I think in weightlifting, it's really useful to use the derivatives. So we can break the movement down and kind of teach it as part practice. But what we also want to make sure is that we're not breaking it down too much, because then we end up with like all of these isolated movement skills that actually, when you put it together, they're not performing it anything like they would in the full movement. It's important to break it down, but use like your common derivatives, rather than just saying to an athlete, okay, I want you to do a first pull, then pause, then do a transition, then pause, then do a second pull, then pause, because then we end up with something that looks nothing like the real movement. So it's making sure part practice, but not breaking it down excessively, I think.
So how the concept of chunking will relate to what you said?
I guess this idea of movement chunking is kind of grouping movements together. So if we look at like the hang clean, for example, if you broke it down in isolation, they'd be performing kind of that transition movement, a second pull movement, and the catch. But rather than getting them to perform those all in isolation, we're kind of chunking that together, and they just perform the hang clean. And then that gets an outcome that looks more like when we put it together as a full lift, and more like what they would do in like a full clean.
All right. So my understanding is you chunk the phases, the small steps together in part of the full weightlifting movement to hopefully get as close in this range, as close to the actual movement as you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, we talked a little bit about movement, development of movement, and development of physical capabilities. In your paper, you discuss a little bit how they relate to each other. Can you speak to that? So why physical capabilities and movement skills should be developed? Because you could develop the fundamental physical skills first and then weight with technical. But in your paper, say it's better to do it at the same time. Yeah, let's start with why.
For me, it just seems like a more time efficient approach to be developing, I guess, like capacities alongside the movement skill. It's sometimes easier for athletes to associate capacity then with the movement skill-ish if they're performed like within the same session. So in weightlifting, quite often we'll use complexes, for example. So you might do a hang clean followed by a front squat. And that might reinforce the idea of, okay, when you get in your catch position, it should look like your front squat, and you might do it in that order, or you might switch it up and do the front squat first and then the hang clean. And I think doing them together kind of takes advantage of your body's really clever in terms of it often will auto-correct and put you into the correct movement pattern that you need to be in, because it knows that it's learned the front squat already. And then it knows that actually when it's in that catch position, that's maybe not efficient. And if you kind of ask them to pause, they probably wouldn't be able to pause because they're maybe on their toes or the bars further forward. Whereas if you then reinforce that with a pause or repeating a front squat, you kind of get in this like auto correction kind of thing. So I think doing them together can help take advantage of that. So yeah, from a time efficiency point of view in terms of learning movement skills, and then also just from injury prevention point of view in terms of if we can make sure that athletes can get in the correct positions first, that then reduces their risk of getting injured, but also helps them to be most effective at that movement. So they're kind of using the correct muscles, therefore producing as much force as they can in that position.
You mentioned that complexes would be a one way to bring the two together. Are there any other ways to do it?
I guess kind of using a bit of like a constraints-based approach can help to do it as well. I'm quite a fan of this idea of like constraints-based coaching or cueing within weightlifting and strength and conditioning in general. So this idea of setting up a constraint predominantly on the environment is the ones that we kind of use to get desired outcome that you want. So to, I guess, encourage or force an athlete to perform a movement within a certain way within the constraints that you've set up. So as a weightlifting specific example, if you've got an athlete who's maybe doing a clean or a hang clean and the bar's coming away from them, this idea of setting up an obstruction, so maybe a dowel in front of them, and they actually then get that feedback of, if the bars come too far away from them, they'll contact that bar. They get that knowledge of performance then, and they will correct it, hopefully, on the next rep to make sure that they're then performing it within that constraint. Yeah, setting that up. Another example, this idea of like off the cliff, we call it. So standing on kind of like the edge of a low platform, and it's a similar idea. So it likewise, rather than looking at bar path, it looks at their weight distribution, which is maybe taking it back a step and looking at the key contributor that we maybe want to look at. So I'd use this one preferentially if possible. So if they then let their weight shift too far forward, as a knock-on effect, they then might fall forward, but actually the body kind of corrects to make sure that they stay on that platform when they're doing it. I've never seen anybody fall off the front of the platform. So yeah, I guess kind of using constraints within coaching is a really good way. And similar to this idea of like similes and metaphors, an advantage of a constraint is that it also promotes this external focus of attention. We know that there's been a lot of research around the benefits of external cueing and external focus of attention. We know that the athlete will be better performing the skill kind of then and there within that coaching session, but also the explicit or kind of external cues can hopefully help with skill retention as well. So maybe when they're out doing weightlifting in their own sessions and their coach isn't there, or they come back next week in their coaching session, you then just reinforce that constraint or external cue. In theory, or based on the research, they'll then be more effective at performing that movement skill.
You have in your paper weightlifting development progression scheme, which I really feel like will be able to explain and beautifully what it is and how to use it.
The progression scheme is this idea that if we start and develop the foundations, good foundations of physical capacities, skill development, if we've got those good foundations, then we can kind of progress and build upon those. So in terms of like physical capacity, it's this idea that initially we want to start and we want to teach athletes general kind of motor control and body weight management. So learning how to move in and out of these athletic mode skill competencies kind of repeatedly and able to get into good positions. So can they squat Can they firstly find a good position of a squat, and can they then repeatedly move in and out of this consistently kind of across sessions? Then from that, it's this idea of building basic strength and then building on that to develop maximum strength. So can we actually get them squatting with some load? Can we then increase that load, or can we kind of manipulate the training prescription to shift it a little bit more to this idea of maximum strength development? So we know that in terms of training prescription, initially this kind of high volume or high number of repetitions is good for repetition and learning new movement skills. So we might start off and they might be doing a squat for, I don't know, like 8 to 12 repetitions, body weight, and we're just reinforcing getting in a good position. Then from there, we might reduce the number of repetitions. So we're dropping down to kind of 8 repetitions, and we might start to load the movement to then really start to work on some underpinning kind of maximum strength and looking at 5 repetitions at then this high intensity. So can they do front squats or even back squats? Because we know that we can reach higher intensities with a back squat if we're looking at purely lower body strength. So can they do back squat at kind of like 85% of their 1RM, 5 repetitions, and that would be the prescription then that's within their program. Then if we want to kind of make it even more sport specific to weightlifting, this idea of explosive strength, so focusing then on this idea of intent and kind of moving as fast as they can within the movements, and maybe even shifting over to like slightly ballistic exercises, so looking at loaded jumps, for example, as well. So that's kind of like the physical capacity side of things. And then in terms of like the skill development, it's this idea of getting like good movement competencies first. So that relates to the athletic movement skills, getting competent at those, getting competent at squatting, hinging, pushing, pulling, core bracing. Then it's actually looking a little bit more at kind of technical competency. So actually, we've maybe started to introduce some of the weightlifting derivatives. So we've upped the complexity of the movements. Now, can they demonstrate a good technical competency at those? And then next stage of that, kind of based on some of the models of skill development, is this idea that actually then we want them to develop this idea of technical autonomy. So they're able to perform the movements in kind of a bit more of an autonomous state. So they don't have to think about performing the movements as well. It kind of just becomes, there's a lot less movement error, a lot less need for you to kind of intervene as a coach. And again, they're just more consistent at the movements. And then the last kind of stage is this idea of like technical refinement. So we've kind of got really infrequent errors in their weightlifting movements, and as a coach, I guess you're kind of looking to develop this idea of like a bit of a autonomous athlete in terms of they're maybe showing an ability to correct their own movement errors at this point, or at least an awareness of those errors for you to kind of then intervene as a coach. And then in terms of exercise selection side of things as well, so I've mentioned it throughout, so this idea of starting with the athletic motor skill competencies first, then kind of starting to build foundation strength. So we might there be picking movements that we can actually load a little bit more. So we're still doing these fundamental movements. We're still maybe squatting, pushing, hinging, but we might change the exercise selection. So we might look at a back squat, for example, to build strength, to load it up a little bit more. We might then look at overhead squat, for example. So we know that in the snatch position, an athlete definitely needs to be able to get in that overhead squat position in the catch. So we're making sure that they've got these foundational movements for weightlifting, like an RDL, like an overhead squat.
Let's go through clean and jerk and snatch progressions and how to layer them for athlete development.
In terms of like progressing clean, jerk and snatch, just this idea of, again, athletic motor skill competencies kind of underpinning the full movements, in this idea that we kind of build like body weight movements first, then we progress onto foundation strength, where we can start to add some load to these movements, and then we can start to progress onto the weightlifting derivatives before we then perform the movement kind of in full. So this idea that there's some I guess, more specific athletic motor skill competencies that can link to the weightlifting movements. So for example, squatting is obviously really important for the catch positions in weightlifting. So a foundation movement or an athletic motor skill competency might be a bodyweight squat that we need to master. Likewise, jumping and landing is really important. So in the catch position, we know that there's kind of quite high eccentric demand for athletes. So this idea of jumping and landing and getting in a proficient landing position. So maybe starting off with some box jumps where we've got kind of that lower eccentric load, and then progressing onto a counter movement jump, for example, and checking that athletes get in a good landing position. Because in theory, that might mirror the position that they might get in at the end of their clean or at the end of their snatch or at the end of their jerk. Likewise, upper body pushing and pulling is going to be really important. So if we think about the jerk specifically, that overhead press is really important. But before we get an athlete overhead pressing, we might actually want to make sure that they can perform a horizontal press, because the demands of a horizontal press are kind of a little bit easier in terms of there's less stability needed. So making sure an athlete can perform a bodyweight press up, for example, before we're then asking them to perform an overhead press. And we might start an overhead press with a dowel to then progress onto a loaded overhead press to then make it a little bit more dynamic and start performing one of the weightlifting derivatives, like a push press, for example. And then from there, if we were looking at a split jerk, we might progress on to actually getting them to catch in a split position. So can they perform a behind the neck push jerk, which some athletes might find a little bit easier without the bar passing in front of their face, to then progress on to a full split jerk. And then we've kind of got stages in between that as well. So we'll check that athletes can master that split position and actually check that they've got strength in that split position. So again, we're not just overhead pressing. One of our other fundamental movements that might underpin it might be that split squat and checking that kind of unilateral single leg strength as well.
So working with young athletes is big in a way, because not only they have to learn all the movements and competencies and capabilities at the same time, but their body will also change. They will go through puberty. So what are the things the coaches and maybe parents should be aware of?
It's definitely really important and really useful for coaches to have an understanding of growth and maturation when they're working with young athletes, to kind of factor that into their prescription, and also bear it in mind in terms of what they're like seeing in front of them as well. So we know, for example, that around puberty, athletes might experience a phase that we might call like a bit of awkward adolescence, for example. So they've got longer limb lengths, changes in kind of their mass, which might change their center of mass displacement, which kind of will have a really big impact on their weightlifting performance specifically. So as coaches, we need to be mindful that they might come in for their training session when they're at this stage, and they might show, I guess, what you might think is a bit of a deterioration in their performance in terms of last week they could do it really well, and this week they're kind of getting in some funky positions. So it's, as a coach, having an awareness that actually that's okay. And it might even be, or it is also really beneficial to communicate that to the athletes as well. It can be really frustrating as an athlete to be doing something perfectly the week before, maybe with load, and then come in the next week and you're telling them they've got to take the weight off and go right back to body weight, for example. So communicating with athletes that it's normal and completely natural for this to happen, and the importance of why we're taking things back from an injury prevention point of view and a performance point of view, to then hopefully build back on it later on when we have then kind of re-established this foundation that we can build on. So in terms of monitoring it as coaches, there's a couple of different methods out there. So it's quite easy to do nowadays as well. Like, even if you jump online, there's some calculators that you can just input the information in. You can take the athlete's standing height and seated height and body mass, and then get what might be referred to as kind of a maturity offset value. And then there's equations that you can use. So more commonly, kind of the Millward equation, that then predicts the maturity offset. And you can just be mindful of then what stage they're kind of at. Alternatively, there's some other methods. Cami and Roach, their method looks at working out the predicted adult height, and then from that, we can get a percentage of predicted adult height. So work out actually, well, kind of how much growing has this athlete got left to do? And then those percentages also then correspond to maturity status as well. So if they're kind of around this like 85, 86% of predicted adult height up to kind of 90%, that might then correspond with being in this like circuit-pubertal stage where we might see some of that kind of awkward adolescence, or the athlete might be experiencing some of these kind of growth spurts or this like rapid inclining kind of growth rates. In terms of kind of like monitoring it, ideally the best way to monitor it is longitudinally. So we can calculate it from kind of like cross-sectional data, but ideally if you're working with a group of athletes and you're seeing them regularly, the research suggests kind of monitoring it around every 3 months to actually track it and maybe calculate growth curves and then predict maturity from there as well.
So one is good to know for performance and how training planning and progress. The second reason could be to be aware in terms of injury prevention. Mm-hmm. From, I don't know data about weightlifting specifically, but from other sports, we know that within the 6 months from big growth spurt, the athlete is more susceptible to sustained injury. So it's good to know when this time comes. Would you have any advice how to deal, apart from to go back, to regress a little bit, either load or technical demand on the athlete? Mm-hmm. Any other pointers you would have how to, in general, I would say fix the error.
So yeah, I guess I'd kind of come back to this idea of adding in some constraints as well to give the athlete that feedback of when that error has taken place. Just again, constraining the movement, having them perform easier tasks, but then also introducing a constraint as well can be quite beneficial. I was going to say kind of mention around this idea of, so we want to make sure we're addressing kind of the technical error, but also make sure the athlete's got the physical qualities to then perform the movement. So for example, if an athlete's struggling to get in like an overhead squat position, it might be that actually they've got poor, I don't know, like overhead strength to get in that position. So it's making sure you're thinking about what is maybe the cause of that error as well, and making sure that you've addressed maybe some of the technical but also some of the like physical limitations that the athlete might have.
Okay, the next question is, what is your favorite color?
Oh, my favorite color, probably like a turquoisey color.
Okay, so I will make an infographic from the paper we discussed today, and that will be the color I will use. So that's a prompt.
In turquoise. Nice.
Comment from Evidence Strong. Last question, where people can find you?
A confession, I'm pretty naff at social media. So I wouldn't say I'm worth a follow if you're looking for me to kind of give out anything useful. But by all means, I'd welcome kind of any follows on probably Twitter or likewise email. My Twitter handle, this shows you how poor I am at even using it, because I am going to double check that I'm giving over the right one. My Twitter handle is at StephMorris979. But by all means, like, I'd welcome questions about any of the paper, and I like to chat about it all, and it gives me practice talking about it all as well. So
okay, Steph, it was a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alex. Yeah, pleasure to talk to you, and a pleasure to meet you virtually as well. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.